Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Arv. I'll be guiding the meditation today. And our teacher today will be Tuere. And the topic for today, as it has been for this whole month, will be birth, aging, and death. Is there anyone here who's new to this set or new to Sims? Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Welcome. To give a brief overview of how this works, from 10 to 11:30, this entire sit, this Sangha will meet. It'll start with a 25-minute guided meditation that I'll offer some guidance during that. And then after that, there'll be a Dharma talk. And that's when our teacher, Tuere, will be leading us in the discussion of birth, aging, and death. After the talk itself, there is generally a period for discussion where we may break into rooms and discuss some of the ideas that have come up. And it'll end with announcements and an offering of metta, of loving kindness to the group and to our broader communities across the world. I'll start by reading our community statement to remind us that while we don't share the same physical space these days, we're still here together, we're sitting together. As we enter this space, let us remember that we are entering a sacred space, a space for being in the moment with whatever is present. We recognize our deep connection with one another, where each of us is welcome just as we are. Freeing our minds of greed, hatred, and delusion through this practice offers the opportunity for others to do the same and reduces ignorance and hatred in the world. It is with gratitude that we practice together. We'll start the meditation with three community breaths. And I'll be unmuted for my breath. And I'd invite you, if you wish, to do the same. You can unmute yourself so we can all hear those breaths we're taking together at our paces. I'll begin the meditation with one bell, and after 25 minutes, I'll ring a second bell. Let's begin today with a focus on our breath. Not controlling the breathing, but just watching it flow. Perhaps you can feel the breath most easily at your nostrils as cool air enters and warmer air passes out. Or perhaps it's most palpable in the expansion and contraction of your chest or belly. Noting especially the transitions, where the in-breath ends and the out-breath begins, and when the out-breath ends and returns to an in-breath. Noticing perhaps how easily we relinquish one breath and move to another. We don't cling to one breath as it passes and transitions. We make ourselves available for the new breath and the nourishment it brings. I'd like to offer the inquiry. Can we do the same with the rest of our lives? As every experience ends and is replaced by a new experience. Can we hold lightly to those experiences? The poet Stuart Kestenbaum writes in his poem Prayer for the Dead. He writes, "The seeds of death are in everything that is born." An invitation to bring to mind ourselves when we were younger. Perhaps it's a specific memory or just an image of yourself that comes to mind. Seeing if you can picture clearly that person or that memory. And noting that not a single cell in our body lasts longer than 15 years. Are we the same entities we were in that memory? We can let this go now and return to the body, noticing both the stillness of the body and the movements and flows within it. The rising and falling of breath. Perhaps the sense of blood flowing, replenishing, changing. undecided, that which is firm and still. Both at once. Philip Moffat, who will be here next week, refers to the earth element of the body, that heaviness, that stillness, that firmness that we can often sense in our pelvic bones as they make contact with the surface underneath us. By contrast, the air element he refers to can be felt in this breathing, this movement of air going down, pushing up, this force of vitality and change. We can bring a quality of allowing to this experience of our body in movement and stillness. In particular, allowing that movement to change us from moment to moment, to accept the end, the death of one moment, and the beginning of a new moment. Perhaps expanding our attention to notice not only the internal flows and changes that occur from moment to moment, but to have an awareness that the world around us, the world outside of our skin, is also changing from moment to moment. We can bring that same sense of allowing to allow ourselves to be carried through the changing world from moment to moment. In this last minute or so of the meditation, becoming aware of the position of your physical body. Becoming aware of what you're doing. You're sitting here meditating. You're paying attention to these transitions.
I guess we're going to turn it over to me here, huh? I have a treat. You know, for those of you that have been coming to this sit regularly, we do a story before we begin. That's what this sit started out as. It was for kids, really. Opportunity for parents to practice with their kids. And it was special, this story that we would read. And even when the kids didn't always want to come with the parents, they were like, you can go, but I'm going to stay here. We would still read the stories anyway, because that was the special part. And then when we went online, we didn't really have access. I didn't have access to all the books. I think Lauren probably still did. And Lindo had some, Suze had some, but I didn't have any of the books. And so I used to read from my little Zen koan books, but it's not really the same as a kid story. It's a little difficult to even understand what it has to do with. But Susan, who is a elementary school teacher, she sent me a story online on YouTube. I didn't know anything about it. My granddaughter's going to love it. So today we are going to have a story about what we're talking about, these beginnings and endings and changes. Somebody else is reading it. I'm not reading it. But it's a game changer for me, man. I have been looking at so many children's stories. It's like I couldn't choose which one I was going to use, but I decided to keep the original one. And so I am going to share my screen so we can all enjoy this cute little story here. And then we'll just talk about the Dhamma implications in just a minute.
Fletcher and the Falling Leaves by Julia Rawlinson. Pictures by Tiffany Beek. The world was changing. Each morning when Fletcher bounded out of the den, everything seemed just a little bit different. The rich green of the forest was turning to a dusty gold, and the soft, swishing sound of summer was fading to a crinkly whisper. Fletcher's favorite tree looked dull, dry, and brown. Fletcher was beginning to get worried. "I think my tree is sick," said Fletcher. "What's wrong with it?" his mother asked. "Its leaves are turning brown," said Fletcher. "Don't worry, it's only autumn," she said. Fletcher ran back to his tree and patted the rough bark. "Don't worry, it's only autumn," he said. "You'll be feeling better soon." But the tree didn't get better. Each day, more leaves turned brown. One morning, the wind blew a small brown leaf off of a branch. Fletcher jumped up and caught it, very gently, in his paw. "Don't worry, Tree. I've got your leaf. I'll fix you." Fletcher looked around, picked a piece of grass, and carefully tied the leaf to a branch. Just then, another gust of wind ruffled Fletcher's fur. The little leaf shook itself free and fluttered back to the ground. Fletcher picked it up again and thought very hard. Then he poked the leaf onto a twig and pushed it down firmly. "Now you hold on tight," said Fletcher. "No more flying around." The little leaf gave a tiny rustle in reply. The next day, a strong wind was blowing through the forest. Fletcher rushed out of the den and ran all the way to his tree. Lots of branches were bare, and little lost leaves spun everywhere. "Don't worry, Tree. I'll catch them for you. I promise." Round and round and round whirled Fletcher after the swirling leaves.
"Leaves? Wonderful. Just what I need for my nest," said a squirrel.
"But these belong to the tree," said Fletcher.
"Don't take them away."
"The tree doesn't need them anymore," said the squirrel, bounding up.
"Help! Help! The wind and the squirrel are stealing our leaves," cried Fletcher.
"Leaves, terrific. Just what I need to keep warm," said a porcupine rolling around.
"But these belong to the tree,"
said Fletcher, plucking leaves from the porcupine's needles.
"Not anymore,"
snuffled the porcupine, and away he rolled.
"Help, help! The wind, the squirrel, and the porcupine are stealing our leaves," cried Fletcher.
Suddenly, a flock of friendly birds swooped down from the sky. They picked up the leaves in their beaks and poked them into the tree's branches. Soon, the tree was leafy again, and Fletcher flopped down and smiled.
"Thank you, birds, thank you,"
he gasped as the birds fluttered away. He lay looking up through the leaves at the sky and drifted off to sleep. But the wind continued to blow, and the branches still danced. The leaves shivered and shook themselves and began to wriggle free. They tossed and turned and twitched and twirled and tumbled to the ground. They brushed Fletcher's ears and nose and filled his dreams with a whispering sound. When Fletcher finally woke up, he couldn't believe his eyes. Instead of a roof of dancing leaves, all he could see were bare branches against the sky.
"Oh, tree, I am so sorry," gulped Fletcher. "All your leaves are gone."
But then he saw, high in the branches, one small leaf still holding on.
"I won't let the wind steal that one," said Fletcher, and he began to climb.
He crawled along to the last leaf and held it firmly onto its branch. All day long the wind blew. The branch bounced, and Fletcher held tight.
"I'll stay with you, leaf," he said. "Don't worry."
But then, with a sudden whoosh of wind, the branch bounced high. With a blip, the leaf let go and fluttered, like a little flag clutched in Fletcher's paw. Fletcher looked sadly at the leaf he had promised to save. He carried it carefully down the tree and back to the den. He made a cozy little bed for it and gently tucked it in. But all night long, he could only think of his tree, all on its own. At dawn, Fletcher tiptoed outside. The wind had finally stopped blowing, and the air was cold. The moon still hung in the clear sky, and pale stars glimmered. As he came to his favorite tree, Fletcher saw a magical sight. The tree was hung with 1,000 icicles, shining silver in the early light.
"You are more beautiful than ever,"
whispered Fletcher.
"But are you all right?"
A tiny breeze shivered the branches, making a sound like laughter, and in the light of the rising sun, the sparkling branches nodded. Fletcher gave his tree a hug, Then he went back to the den for a nice, warm breakfast. The end.
Wasn't that great? Back to the days! I've looked at so many children's stories, so we are back to our little children's stories. You can see what this has to do with birth, aging, and death. You can see how Fletcher's inability to understand the natural changing of the season is what caused all his worry and fear. Wasn't really what was happening. It was the fact that he didn't understand that losing leaves did not mean the tree was dying. And his inability to understand that is what caused all of his worry. This is the same thing that I think the Buddha was trying to get us to see. That as human beings, we live in a world of continuous and constant change, like Arv brought out. The whole point, I think, of dependent origination that we spent the whole year talking about is really just this. We are constantly changing. And if we don't see that change, it gets us caught up in worrying and trying to fix and compare and judge. And we get caught up in thinking these people are bad because they're not doing this. And this is wrong because this is not like this. And oh, we got to save the leaves, taking the leaf home, put it in its little bed. I mean, it's just crazy what we do because we don't understand a natural change that's occurring. We don't understand or we don't see it. And so instead, we push against it, try to make things stay the way they were, or try to force something new to happen to get rid of something we don't like. And I think this whole year has boiled down to this very last this last Sunday, this last week in dependent origination, which is what we've been looking at all year, boils down to this. Change is a naturally occurring phenomena when you live in a conditioned world. When conditions come together, this is what we experience. And when conditions fall away, that is what we experience. There's that conditionality to life. We cannot disrupt that conditionality. We can't fix it, hold it. Our desperation to try to make it stay, like poor little Fletcher, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. Of course, the tree seemed quite gracious to poor Fletcher. There's a way in which life can be even with all of its destruction and its difficulty, life does have a way, like the tree, of waking us up to the reality of change. I don't know that our relationship with the climate is going to stay the same as it was before the pandemic. But all over the world, you can read all these articles now and look at all these things where people have really, this climate change situation has shaken people a bit. And so maybe we'll see things a little differently. I don't know. I do. So I don't know if other people do. So on these last weeks that we spend together, we don't give this long talk. We do a little short talk, and I'm going to talk about some practice tips after we after we talk a little bit. But, well, actually, I'll just tell you now, because it's really quite simple to do this. It's just paying attention to endings, paying attention to beginnings when something starts anew. It's all around us constantly. Paying attention to when something seems like it's in the midst of changing. And in this context, in the broader beginning to understand dependent origination as just an aspect of life, we pay attention to patterns, because patterns are constantly just this beginning, ending, changing, beginning, ending, changing, beginning, ending, changing, beginning. And it's just this constantly beginning again, beginning again, beginning again, beginning again. So when we start seeing patterns, we can begin to see conditionality. We can see conditionality by just noticing our sense doors and noticing what it is that the sense doors pick up. We can see how the ears, when it picks up a nice sound, how we take to that sound. You know, if you think about it, we didn't make the sound. We didn't make our ears hear the sound. And yet we somehow take ownership of it when it's a nice sound, and we kind of don't like it. We want it to stop when it's a bad sound, like it has something to do with us. So we can begin to notice through the sense doors how we take ownership of things that are really just natural occurring things. And we can remember Fletcher. I think those five little simple things can have a world of difference on your ability to see the conditionality of life and the natural nature of change that happens all around us. We can get less caught. Just remember Fletcher. So when you get all caught in a tizzy about something, just remember Fletcher and say, oh, am I trying to hold on to something that really naturally needs to go, change, be different? So that's it. I think we're going to go into small groups so we have a good fair amount of time to talk with each other and see what comes up for us. But I want to give anybody an opportunity that they want to leave to bow out gracefully now before I set these groups up. So,
Tawiri, is there a specific question for our groups, or is it mostly about the practice suggestions?
I'm thinking that how's this practice of aging, birth, and death without it being about you individually, right? So how is it just the natural sense of it? That's what I think is the better way. That's what I think you could talk about. So yeah, I think just you could talk about the whole year of how it's been with dependent origination, or you can just talk about just what you got from this story, what you think about that in relation to your own life, or this whole notion of aging, birth, and death that we're in just this moment. Any of that would all work. All right, so you should have an invitation here to join a room. All righty. So, how was that little time to talk about it amongst yourselves? I really like that we do this. I think talking about Dhamma, you can hear it, practice with it, but you really need to talk about it with like-minded people, somehow bring it all together. So, anybody want to share anything that they kind of heard or thought about? Yes, Bob?
Hi. I was talking with Cheryl and Kathy, and we went back to something you talked about, Tuari, in one of the, I think it was a Thursday evening, and maybe elsewhere too, but you were talking about the Tibetan idea of bardos.
Yeah.
And thinking about the order of those bardos, also about instead of birth, aging, and death, death, I can't remember what the Tibetan version was, but working backward to birth.
Death, changing, and birth.
And just thinking about the pandemic as a kind of bardo. That's what I was thinking, was that it's sort of like a transition that we're going through that we don't know what it's going to change and birth, I guess. So
that's right. But we know we're in a change of something.
Yeah.
Something's changing here. And it brings with it its own, you know, its own difficulties. But the way we used to live has definitely ended.
It's like the goddess Kali of destruction and creation. It's like, we're stuck in the destruction time.
Yeah. Well, we don't know it's a destruction time. It's like with Fletcher. He just didn't understand that the leaves needed to give way. So it felt to him like everything was, you're taking the leaves and we got to keep it together because that's the way it's supposed to be. But we just know we're in a change and we don't know what the new beginning's going to look like. We may be going into the dark ages or we may be coming out of the dark ages. We don't know. We just know we're in a change here of some sort. And it carries with it a lot of confusion and difficulty. Akila, I see your hands up.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say that in our group, what I shared was that during this pandemic, I value my face-to-face interactions with people. I'm more present for those face-to-face interactions, even though we're all like masked up and, you know, we're behind glass and stuff like that. I just really am more present than I've ever been before in my entire life. Like, even like going to the grocery store and interacting with the cashier, I noticed their face, their hair, you know, what they smell like, what they're wearing. Yeah. I don't necessarily, I used to just hear people, you know, and just have the transaction, but now I like listen to them.
That's right.
I ask them about how their day is going, you know, and I thank them and I just keep, you know, especially to the essential workers, you know, each time I interact with one, even though it's just like doing something as simple as picking up a can of corn, I'm like, thank you for putting out this corn, you know, thank you for putting out this celery. I mean, you know, I thank the bus driver. Thank you, bus driver, for getting me to the store. I mean, I'm just so like more present. And even though I've always been, for the most part, I consider myself a person that's always grateful and thankful. You know, and I was just raised that way, you know, to be polite and be thankful. I'm just like truly like in the moment of gratitude when I interact with people now. It's not just like a transaction, you know? And it's just, it's that's one of the positive things that have come out of the pandemic for me. You know, even though I miss my coworkers and I just cannot wait until we all get together in the same room.
Yeah.
So that's for me. You know,
and I think that's it, you know, what you're pointing to is even in the midst of change, we can find things about it that support us and things about us that, you know, it makes it difficult. But this is the nature of change that we're living in.
Yeah.
This is the nature of it. So it's great.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's why I landed on Fletcher, even though I looked at a lot of stories. It was his desperation to save the leaves. And I knew that it was not that big of a deal. His mom knew it. You know, the squirrel knew it. The porcupine knew it. Everybody knew it except for him. He just didn't seem to understand.
Yeah.
And I think that really points to where we are right now.
Right.
Great. Anyone else want to share anything?
Yeah. Huh. I just kind of going along with that, one of the things I really appreciated about that story was kind of the what it called out about how, you know, when there's change that you aren't aware of, kind of like Fletcher wasn't aware of the season front. And when he talked to his mother, she knew about winter, like the porcupine knew about it. They weren't that, you know, worried about it. But when there's change that you don't know that's coming or that you aren't used to it, it's a lot harder to deal with.
Yeah.
And so I think that was just.
Yes, that's right. And you notice that he didn't recognize that he was in a change. So he was desperately trying to keep it the way it was. Mm-hmm. This is what our desperation does when we don't know we're in change. We think that they're somehow messing up what it's supposed to be. And it's supposed to be what it was. So we're desperately trying to make things stay the way they were. But it has ended, and we just don't see that. And I think that's what the Bartles were also pointing to. When you allow the endings of things to happen, you can more easily move into that transition of change and whatever difficulty that is. Yeah. Anyone else?
Tori?
Yeah.
In various breakout groups, something, a theme that keeps coming up is when we're talking about birth and death in terms of our physical life, and the death we're talking about is not a change of circumstance around us, but we're dying. That's the change. There's people seem to be, and I seem to be, pretty comfortable with the notion of the physical change of death. You know, rotting away or composting or whatever and becoming elementals that give rise to a new birth. But when it comes to consciousness, it's really hard for me to conceive of not having consciousness any longer and not knowing what's on the other side of life, what consciousness may or may not be in death. I mean, I don't know. But it seems like a stumbling block in that acceptance of physical death is the notion of consciousness. Do you have anything you can offer about that?
I think you're hitting something here, Leslie, that it is the point of it. So all death, there is a physical, material ending of something. But the thing that we are fighting with in all deaths is the lack of connectability to that thing that we know. We're moving into the unknown in all cases, whether it's the consciousness, what happens to the consciousness in the future, or whether it's... What am I going to be like if I let go of this habit? Who exactly am I going to be if I'm no longer angry all the time, or if I'm no longer this all the time, or how will I live if I don't have that job? If it ends, it's hard for us to see into the unknown. But the only part, I believe this strongly, the only part of us that has difficulty with the unknown is the mind, is our conscious, our thinking mind, is the part of us that has difficulty with the unknown, because it needs to have a sense of a permanency to know where to go and what to do. And Buddha's point was to cultivate the heart, that the mind is necessary, but we cultivate the heart. And part of the point of that is when you cultivate a embodiment of the physical body, an embodiment, a sense of embodiment, you're going to realize that you are not the physical body. And if you are not the physical body, just because the physical body ends doesn't mean consciousness ends. But as long as we are tied to the physical body and we think that's who we are, then the mind is going to have a problem with the fact that the physical body is ended, and then it automatically is going to think, well, I won't be able to make it. What am I going to do? But if we lose a job, we get another job. I lost my mom. I didn't have any clue what I was going to do without her since it was so unexpected, but I found a way to be without her. I'm good. We talk. It's just different, but that is what I think that's the issue here, is not to get caught up in the physicality being the only realness of something, that there is a realness of something way beyond the physicality of it. And that we have to access through the heart. We can't really access that through the intellect. Or when I say the heart, we have to access it through a sense of embodiment, the felt sense of it. That is enduring. It's the intellect of it that's not enduring. Does that make sense?
Well, yes. It actually takes me into a... I don't believe that Gautama actually said we had souls or, beyond death, all of that. That was not it. But if I think of consciousness as an energetic, I can see continuity of energy.
I think that's what he's pointing to, is the continuity of energy. And that's why our actions are so important, because our actions produce energy, and that energy carries. And the impact of that energy carries on further. I have to get to another question, but so Leslie, you should email me so we can talk more about this.
Very helpful. Thank you, Tori.
Yeah. Susie, I see your hand up.
It's a little bit of a digression, but I hope you don't mind. When you were talking about the unknown, I just have two of my cats lying with me, and I love one of the things about living with animals that's so humbling is just to learn from them about being an animal. Like, and for them, life is, divided into safe and not safe. And part of they're very attached to their territory. So part of their terror on going to the vet is they're taken out of their territory. So I was talking with another animal spirit person, and he was saying, how can we be so afraid of change when we crave it so much sometimes? And he said, well, we're just animals. So I have a little bit of a, like at that level or in that place, is a little bit of a different, seems to me a different route from when you're talking about the body, which, and I'm humble about that notion because I don't have a lot of experience in it, but versus the mind, that we're also very much shaped by those animal-like fears, aren't we?
Like we are in some respects, but when I talk about the body, I'm not talking about the physical body. I mean, there is a physical body here. But there is a way that we can close our eyes to physicality and sense into impulse, expression, consciousness itself. And that turning away from the outer world, the world of physicality, and moving more fully into the world of sensory awareness, the sense of consciousness, it changes our relationship with experience greatly. But so if you meditate to simply get calm, then you can try to meditate in this calmness and maybe you'll get calm, maybe you won't, but you'll just keep working at it to get calm. The Buddha was less pointing to meditation as a means of calmness, which is what the Western kind of trendy version of meditation is. What he was pointing to, I think, was meditation as a means to close off from the physical world and begin to learn how to move in a more sensory, more connected, energetic way. And if we could learn how to move in the more sensory, energetic way, this more embodied way, we could see a different aspect of existence. We could see something beyond just beyond the physical, because we are so dependent on the physical, we could see something beyond that. And if we learn to see into that beyond the physical, then even if it's scary, or even if it's painful, or even if it's unknown, without the limitation of the mind's having to know, then we could go into it regardless, because we have a beginner's mind. We feel into it rather than judge it. And that's what all the studies in mindfulness have proved. All hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of studies. What they prove is that when someone closes their eyes, turns away from the physicality of the world, their ability for resilience, steadiness, stoicness, strength, whatever you want to call it, inner core, gets magnified, and our ability to be with whatever changes. That's what we're turning into. That's what he was pointing to as liberation.
Right. Yeah. That's why I acquire all these air miles zooming over to Seattle.
Yes, that's right.
well, because one of the many things I appreciate in you as a teacher is that you will so often speak from the before and after from your experience. And so I think, you know, you're just, you're so much of this earth. that's so helpful.
Yeah, that's it. So that's what
you create. You help to create little, like those soap bubbles. You know, the soap bubbles that you blow. You create these little bubbles of hope.
That's right. That's it. That's what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, thank you.
Anyway, I gotta go. Thank you all so much for this rich time. Arv, you're gonna have to bring us out quickly.
I'll try.
Yeah. Well, I just want to say one thing about the Phillips Moffitt thing. If you have not signed up for that, at least sign up for Friday, because you will not be disappointed for spending these 3 days with Philip. Before the holidays, before the whole new year, all of it. I think Philip is going to be a great way for ending this year out with some stillness and movement. All right, great.
Tawari?
Yeah.
I have signed up, but I've gotten no recognition for that.
No, I think the emails will start coming out soon, I hope.
Okay.
But I'm glad you said that. I will send out I will send an email to people. Cheryl's actually on this call, isn't she?
Yeah,
there she is. Yeah.
Check your promotions and check your junk mail. Sometimes they end up in there. You should have gotten something.
No, I've gotten nothing.
Interesting. Okay, I'm not registered to you, but I'll look into it. Thanks.
Yeah. Oh,
thank you. Sorry.
Yeah. And if you haven't, then in email registrar@seattleinsight.org and okay. Double check.
Yeah, right. that would be best to just email the registrar.
Yeah.
What's your last?
Boynton, Boynton.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks. Sorry, Arv.
No problem.
Yeah, my apologies.
No, it's good to straighten that up. So I just wanted to give an update on what's to come. We've been talking about Philip Moffitt's retreat next week. Because it'll run from December 4th through 6th, 6th being Sunday, we won't be having this meeting next Sunday, December 6th, and we'll resume again on the 13th. On the 13th, Tuere will lead us. On the 20th, a few of us will share some of our own thoughts. And again, on the 27th, Tuere will lead us. For the last last group meeting for Sunday of the year. We're also transitioning to a new topic next month. Now, I actually don't have the pithy version of this written down, so I'm going to describe it, but then, Tuari, feel free to jump in and say if there's a much simpler way of describing what we're doing. My sense of it is we're stepping back and looking at the entirety of the 12 links in the chain of dependent origination. And we'll be talking about the role of faith, of trust in our practice for keeping this going. I'm going to pause in case there is a pithy version of our topic that I've missed.
Well, I guess you could say it like this. Dependent origination is one thing. Either we follow this cyclical path going towards suffering and more difficulty, or we follow this same cyclical path towards inspiration. Sort of what Susie said. One way goes towards inspiration and liberation. One way goes towards suffering. And we're going to talk about the liberation way. We've spent a year talking about the suffering way.
Right. The path out of the cycle. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Let's see here. Yes. I also want to mention that all of these talks are on the website. I'm going to post them to the chat right now. This is the link to where you can find the recordings for these talks. So you can either click it or save the chat if you want to keep that copied. Otherwise, you can, of course, navigate to it from the website as well. I want to mention also Dana. We'd like to invite you to offer Dana or generosity to our teacher today, Tuare, or to Sims. You can offer Dana by going to the Sims website, seattleinsight.org. And to mention this, we of course offer these teachings freely, regardless of anyone's ability to pay. But at the same time, we wish to support the livelihood of our teachers. And I want to acknowledge that we're probably all making choices now as to how to spend what resources we have on ourselves, on on a variety of causes or things we believe in and want to support. So just acknowledging that and acknowledging that there may be a variety of things that call your attention and that, you know, you should use your own wisdom to decide what what needs the support most. I would like to close with a version of a metta prayer. May we feel the connection that we share to one another in this group. May we experience gratitude for that connection, perhaps deepened by knowing its impermanence. May we wish that gratitude, not only for ourselves, not only for the members of this community, but to all beings everywhere.
All right, good people. Thank you so much for your patience.
Thank you.